Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
And welcome, everybody, to the inaugural episode of the Command Zone.
Your new best resource for everything EDH.
Yes. So I am Jimmy Wong.
And I'm Josh Lee Kwai.
And we're going to get right into it. So what are we talking about today, Josh?
We are talking about EDH Deck Building 101. I think the first step is to sort of go through EDH and how it's different than other Magic formats and how that's going to change how you build your deck differently than standard or modern or legacy or any of that. So hopefully this is going to be eye-opening for people who are just starting out or even people who have been playing EDH for a while. Yep. So the first thing that's different is everybody starts with 40 life.
Ooh, double life.
Yes. So how does that change how you build your deck that because you start with 40 life?
Well, for one, things like mana cost, things like ramp, all sort of aspects of the game are changed because games do go longer. So all of a sudden, that creature that is that 9-drop that you knew you could never play with a regular 60-card deck and 20 life is all of a sudden opened up to you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, games go longer, obviously because you have twice as much life. So that's the first thing that's going to change. Just keep in mind, every card you look at is going to be reevaluated based on the fact that, like, oh this game is going to go a lot longer than, like, a game of standard would go.
Yeah, absolutely.
It also makes, like, the smaller creatures, like low-drop creatures, creatures that just attack and block, things that would be efficient normally, like a Fleece Mane Lion, which is a 2-mana-costed 3/3. Like, that's a great card in standard or at least playable. And in EDH, it just gets outclassed. And it doesn't do enough. I mean, you're not going to beat a player who has 40 life by just attacking him for 3 every turn.
Yeah, absolutely. And having, it's very important to have 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drops in your hand when you start a game with 20 life. It's not as relevant in a game of EDH. And we should mention that EDH is more commonly known as Commander. Because, I mean, a lot of games, we'll just say this way, don't end with creatures attacking and killing someone.
Correct. Most games, I'd say, don't end that way.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind, again, is lower drop creatures that don't have utility are just, for the most part, they're just not worth it.
Yeah. But some cards are seen in an absolutely new light. I think the most obvious is a card called Sarah Ascendant, which is this incredible card now that your life total starts at 40.
Correct, because Sarah Ascendant is a 1-drop. It costs 1 white mana, but it says if you have 30 or more life, then it gets +5/+5 and lifelink. So,
and it flies.
Yeah, and flying. So it's a 6/6 with flying for 1 with lifelink. That's only in Commander because you start with 40 life already. So any card basically that refers to a player's total life has the potential to be like a lot more powerful in EDH because, in the old days, they were designing Magic and they didn't know Commander as a format would ever exist. Mm-hmm. So they're all
multiplayer Magic didn't really exist at all.
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't design cards for players to start with 40 life. So there's some stuff that's just kind of broken. There's this card called Sarah Avatar that just has power and toughness equal to your life.
Life total, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of cards. It's just something, to look out for and reevaluate is cards that refer to your total life because they just have the potential to be a lot more powerful than they were designed to be.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us to our next point is that there are a lot of cards that also refer to quote-unquote opponents.
Right.
Or your opponents, plural. And it's because EDH/Commander is a multiplayer game, and there are quite often more than 2 players in the game.
Correct. And, well, yeah, I mean, a 1-on-1 game of EDH it's barely EDH, really.
Yeah.
It's not really EDH. In fact, even 3 player is, I'd say 4 or more is how EDH is mostly played. So you're going to have to think about something you'd never have to think about in a regular game of Magic, which is politics at the table.
Yep. And now you have threats on your left and right side instead of just across the table from you.
Right. So you have to think about things that are more than just cards in your hand or cards in your deck. You have to think about how is a card, when I play it, going to affect the psyche of the players at the table? Is that going to make them aggressive towards me? Is that going to frighten them into attacking me? Or is it going to do the opposite? Is it going to make it seem like, oh, that's not that good of a card and I don't have to worry about that guy? Like, in EDH is a weird format in that sometimes playing less powerful cards can actually be in your favor.
Correct. And it's a format that I found when I play, I often have cards in my hand that I might be able to play, but in that certain situation faced with whatever else is on the board is not technically the most advantageous thing to do, because a Saracen in turn one is awesome, but that puts the biggest target on your back, because not only are you swinging at people in the air for flying and you're definitely getting lifelink off it, your life total is just going to be ballooning if you're able to do that every turn and no one can take care of that creature. So although it is probably the most amazing first drop you can get in a white deck, it isn't necessarily the most political or technically smart at times if you're just going to go willy-nilly and attack all over the place.
I think something you said that really hits home is, like, you're not always going to play something on curve as you would normally play it, like in a game of Standard.
Right.
Because in a game that's one-on-one, that person's already trying to kill you as much as they can as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. But in a game that's got four players, the other players might not see you as the top threat, so they might not be trying to kill you as fast as possible. So they might be trying to kill another player that looks more scary than you first. So you don't always want to play out your four drop on turn four if it's something that's going to suddenly change their mind and be like, nope, I got to kill that dude first now instead of that other guy. You know, a lot of times it's like, oh, I'm going to let these other two or three duke it out, and I'm going to clean it up when the dust settles. So, you know, again, that changes how you evaluate cards. Like a card that just does damage to everybody and it's not very much damage is like, is it worth pissing everybody off just to do two damage?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You have to really think about those things. Yeah. It does mean that, you know, with more players in the game, there's some niche cards that you might not otherwise play that I think are a little bit more, you can just get away with playing, like disenchant effects or shatter effects, which are like things that get rid of enchantments specifically or artifacts specifically.
And again,
in a normal constructed format, you might not do that, because you don't know if they're going to have an enchantment or an artifact in their deck.
Correct.
But in EDH, it's extremely rare that you would play a game and you would never see an enchantment or an artifact.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with three or four or even five other players at the table, like, there's going to be targets for that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And with the new sets recently, you've got stuff that are legendary gods that are enchantments until they become creatures. And there are lots of other things out there, like, you know, you're going to want to get rid of someone. If someone has a Sol Ring and a Thrain Dynamo out and they're just pumping mana and just clearly 3-4 turns ahead of everyone else, you know, that's a threat, especially if you can't catch up to that threat. Even if you're not being targeted by that person and they're targeting someone else, you're next on that list. So you need to find ways to sort of equalize the board around you without drawing too much attention and at the same time bolstering your own strength. So single target spells, let's talk about those guys.
Yeah. I think we should talk about card advantage really quickly. If you're not familiar with the concept of card advantage, it's basically like, you have two resources, your life and your cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the cards are potentially more important than your life total. Like, if your opponent has no cards and you've got three cards, then you can be ahead in the game even though you're behind in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if your card in a normal one-on-one game, if you've got a card and it destroys one of their things, then that's what we call card parity. I use one of my cards and I got rid of one of your cards.
In return, yeah.
Now, card advantage would be I use one of my cards and I get rid of two of your cards. Or
put a creature down that when he dies becomes another one and I kill one of your guys with it. You know.
Or divination, which is a card that you play and it just draws you two cards. That's called a 2-for-1. It's a classic 2-for-1. I played one card, I got two cards out of it, and now I'm ahead on cards. But in EDH, when you're playing with more players, card advantage is a little bit more complicated. If you play something like a disenchant that gets rid of an enchantment, so there's four players at the table, I disenchant somebody's enchantment, well, now me and that guy have each lost a card. The other two players didn't lose a card.
Anything.
So now I'm at card disadvantage to the table. So single target spells, I'm not saying don't use them. I'm not saying don't put them in because they do have their place, but be careful with them.
I think
you don't want a lot
of
them.
Yeah, obviously you're going to put a Path to Exile in your deck because you just sometimes need to get rid of something, you know, or a Swords to Plowshares. There are some certain elimination cards that are effective, but at the same time, I mean, you are losing one card, your opponent loses one card, and two other people at the table have nothing. They're not a part of the exchange, and they're technically ahead of you. I mean,
just like, sweet, those guys just use cards, and I didn't use anything. And I'm just sitting over here, and I just gained a card on those guys.
And they got rid of the thing that I convinced them was a threat. And because they had an answer,
the politics comes in.
Yeah, exactly. So you might gain a little bit of edge politically because, you know, you can say to the other people, look, I got rid of this, so don't attack me this turn. You know, I spent a card on that. But overall, I'd say it's more important to actually have cards in hand or just be able to draw cards for the ones you're losing.
Yeah, so just be careful with the single target spells. Jimmy's absolutely right when he says Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares, things that like instantly kill one thing, because a lot of times what happens is, you know, somebody does something in one turn and is about to kill you, and to be able to just answer that is powerful. But you don't want too many of those effects in your deck, because you'll just fall too far behind in cards to the table. So
correct. Instead, you're trying to actually get cards that trigger more often, and trigger means triggered abilities on the card. And cards that specifically trigger on every upkeep is actually something that's really big in Commander. And
or cards that trigger on every enemy's turn, every end step, anything that says every, you know, this phase. Because, you know, when you're playing...
Or each opponent's as well.
Exactly. Because when you're playing 1v1, again, that's only one turn. If it says on your opponent's upkeep, do this, that means you do it once, and then it's your turn again. But in Commander, if there's four other players, that means do that thing four times.
Yeah.
So it's four times as powerful as it was maybe designed to be.
Exactly.
So like Prophet of Kruphix is just like an awesome card.
Literally one of the most important EDH cards, I'd say.
If you're playing green and blue, put it in your deck.
Yeah, like, exactly.
There's almost no reason not to. And what it does is you untap all your creatures and your lands on everybody else's untap step.
And you're allowed to play creatures at flash speed.
Yeah. But literally, so that means like, if you have creatures that tap to do stuff, or you can use your mana on other players' turns, you can do it on each of their turns.
Correct.
Yeah. Rather than just only one turn like you would in a normal game of Magic. So
yeah.
Consecrated Sphinx is another one which lets you draw cards.
Two cards for every person drawing a card, yeah.
Which normally in a normal game of Magic would only be two more cards. But in an EDH game, that can be eight more cards before it's your turn again. I mean, that's
crazy. Exactly. That's
crazy.
You don't have to discard those cards until your end step.
Yeah, so you're looking at a full grip of like 15 cards. Mm-hmm. During your turn, and then, you know, maybe discard the three or four that you're over seven.
Yeah.
Another thing to look for on cards is things that like count all cards in all graveyards.
Right, or all instants or sorceries, anything that targets a number of things, or cards in hand even.
Again, because there's just more graveyards.
Yep.
Or there's just more hands, you know, because instead of two, there's five graveyards, you know. So again, there's a card called Consuming Apparition, which is its power and toughness are just equal to the number of cards in all graveyards.
Yep.
That just wasn't designed necessarily for five players, because it can just come down and be like a 26-26, five drop. So
it can just pop out, and you rarely see that in regular Magic, something popping out as like an 18-18, but in Commander, stuff like that is routine.
Yep.
And it's almost, at a certain point, not too surprising. The first time it happens, it definitely catches you off guard. And then you're like, I need to put that card in my deck. But, you know, of course, all the things we're talking about right now, for the most part, are situational and also based on the player group that you're around. So if your player group is one that doesn't run any instants or sorceries, you know, maybe they're all just creature heavy, they're not going to really have spells in their graveyard like that. So if you have cards that specifically count that, not as effective. So always keep that in mind when you're sort of working around with different groups.
So along those lines, kind of like he was saying, like it's very common for people to drop like huge creatures, you know, all of the sudden with haste. You know, it's super rare that just like two and three and four drops attacking and blocking are going to win the game for you. You know, you need to design your deck with synergy, with combos, with
win conditions,
with repetitive effects, with recurrence, big flashy stuff that just happens out of nowhere and ends the game. Like that's how most games of EDH, end. So, you know, like if you're designing a normal standard deck, you might put like, you know, a good curve, really efficient creatures, 2-3-4, lots of 2-3-4 drops, you know, a little bit of removal, and you're just going to hope to get there to 20 life. But this is a format where, you know, because of the amount of players, the amount of life that you have, that like, you know, it's really conducive to like all of a sudden forming like a super combo, all that happens in one turn, and before anybody can blink, you just kill everybody in one shot. Like that happens quite often. So, you know, you want to design your deck that way. Go for like big flashy effects, you know, little small efficient plays, you know, good in other forms of Magic, not so great in EDH.
Yeah, and make sure you can protect yourself up to it too. You know, there are ways of doing that, of also just ensuring that you're going to get there before someone else, because there have been many Commander games where everyone around the table goes, man, if it just was my turn one more time, I would have had you guys.
Yeah,
and it's like
true.
That is really sometimes what it comes down to. And you know, in a regular deck where you're putting two, three, four drops out just to, you know, block or be able to attack and, you know, go one-on-one with someone, you have three, four different tables with completely different boards, and some of them may have completely unblockable creatures. Maybe they're all island walk and you're just playing lands, and you have to deal with each table. Sometimes the only person you can really trust in this situation to finish the game is yourself. You can't rely on someone else having what your deck can counter.
That's a really good point, is that, you know, you need a disruption package in your deck.
Right.
And by that, I mean a way to interact with your opponent's deck, a way to interact with their permanents, with their threats. You know, you need to be able to kill them. You need to be able to bounce them. You need to be able to counter them. You need to be able to exile them. Mm-hmm. You know, you need maybe some graveyard hate. You know, you want to be able to tuck. Tuck is when you use an effect that takes like one of their cards and puts it into their library, on the bottom of their library.
Specifically a commander they're causing too many headaches.
Yep, that's a very good way. You want maybe control magic effects. Like there is no card in Magic that can't be dealt with by another card somehow, but you need to have enough effects in your deck that have a chance. You don't want to just, they play a card and you just have no answer for it in your deck and you're just like dead to them.
Yep.
So you want to have a varied disruption package. Edict effects are really strong because, you know, there's a lot of hexproof, there's a lot of indestructible out there. People love to build those things into their deck, protect their commanders.
Yep.
And sometimes, like, you know, you just make them sacrifice a creature. Well, it doesn't matter if it's got a hexproof or it's got indestructible.
They have to sacrifice that one specific guy. And, you know, I'd say a lot of decks, you need to run at least one Wrath effect. And by Wrath effect, one kind of board wipe effect. And, you know, ultimately, if you're in the right colors, there are great effects for everyone, really.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. Like, Wrath effects are really powerful in EDH. Again, in a two-player game, you're only getting rid of their stuff and your stuff. So you're kind of at card parity. But in a five-player game, you know, sometimes you look around the table and it's just like, man, nobody has 12 creatures, but they've all got four creatures, and I've got two.
Two, exactly.
Or maybe I've got four, but theirs are just awesome. It's just like, I just want to hit the reset button.
Yep.
So Wrath effects are really powerful in EDH. I would say, like, if you have access to them, you want a number of them. You don't just want, you know.
And also at that same effect, instant versus sorcery speed is incredibly important.
Yeah.
It really does make a big difference being able to cast something on their turn as opposed to your own. So if you have kill spells, if you have removal spells that are at sorcery speed, they're great and all, and maybe they are super cheap and super effective in doing it one certain way, but having a response to someone popping out, a huge guy throwing haste and then swinging at you, if you can't respond to that immediately, you know, you're really going to take a big hit. And that's
sometimes you just die. I mean, like,
sometimes
we were saying,
you just die. Yeah.
So, I mean,
welcome to Commander.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes if you don't have that answer, you just die. And that's a really good point about instant speed stuff. Like, so much of Commander is ended by, like, the table looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. There's no, and then all of a sudden somebody just whips out something huge and it's just going to kill you.
Yep.
And you, if you don't have something instant that can deal with it, like, you're just dead.
Yeah.
You know, that happens a lot. So that's another good point.
Yeah.
Another thing is that, like, I would look at the versatility of cards.
Absolutely.
Like if, for instance, you have a choice between Doomblade, which basically destroys a non-black creature.
Yep, not a bad card in Standard.
Yeah, which is
great.
Which is,
kill spell, awesome.
Yeah, and it's instant speed.
Mm-hmm.
But in Commander, every single time I would want to go with Mortify, which does the same thing, but it can also kill an enchantment. So, you know, you don't want to draw a card and it's completely useless to you, you know, and you want as many cards in your deck that sort of serve dual purpose.
Absolutely.
That you can get. So that's, you know, cards that are good in multiple situations. Mm-hmm. Cards that, like, if I draw it on turn 2, I'm happy. And if I draw it on turn 14, I'm happy.
I'm still happy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's going to be a lot more turn 14s in EDH than there is in other forms of Magic. You know, you're just going to go longer into the game. So you don't want to draw some crappy, like, 2-drop that's useless now, you know, later
absolutely.
On.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even if it's like, oh, this would have been great in my opening hand. If you don't, you know, you have a 100-card deck. If you don't draw it in your opening hand, what's it worth to you at that point? You know,
exactly.
when you're top decking and you need something good. And to the same degree, it's also important to, on certain cards, to the wording is really important. Doomblade is a creature.
Right.
I think permanent is the best word to have in a removal spell because
for
permanent
sure.
is
for sure.
anything. Or even non-land permanent because I don't really play with land removal, but being able to remove a permanent as opposed to just a creature is always important. And so those cards, in general, you also find that they're priced slightly higher because they're, you know, you're able to remove a lot more with
it. I mean,
it.
Exile, target, permanent is one of the best things that you could get.
Yeah, those three words
with
are
an instant.
The best.
Yeah. So, and you just led us into sort of the next thing, which is, you know, you have 100 cards in your deck and you don't have any duplicates besides
except
basic
lands.
Yep. Basic land, yeah. But so what does that mean when you have 100 cards in your deck and you don't have the redundancy that you normally have?
Well, yeah, you don't have consistency. You know, you don't have four of some specific creature where you're like, okay, well, I'm drawing 7 cards out of a 60-card deck. I'm going to have a pretty good chance of drawing at least one of the, you know, 8 cards that are a 1 or a 2-drop in my deck. So less consistency is definitely a thing to battle around in EDH, and that always leads to, of course, longer games because things are more drawn out.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't, like, it's hard to build. It's not impossible, but it's tougher to build an EDH deck that's going to have the same consistency as a standard deck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Almost impossible. Yeah. Unless you have tons of the next thing we're going to talk about, which is card draw or mana fixing, you know.
Card draw, I think, is the number one way to sort of fix your consistency, because it's sort of the answer to not having redundancy in your deck, because you can't have multiple copies of any one card. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is you can just load in as much card draw as you can, and then you're sort of rifling through your deck faster, which means that you can find the cards you need, you know, faster. So I think card draw is really important in EDH. And another way to sort of build inconsistency is synergy. So, you know, if you're building a deck that there's like, you know, you don't have four of one creature, but you have four creatures that sort of do the same thing,
right?
Then you've built in some redundancy there, and sort of through synergy you can gain you know, more consistency.
And the nice thing is, it is Commander, you know. I think the funnest decks are the ones that are built around synergy instead of, you know, the fattest, most expensive creatures.
It's good to have a theme, build your deck around a theme or a mechanic or a couple of mechanics, you know, because it's easier to find a lot of cards that share a mechanic than it is just find a bunch of cards that sort of work in you know, synergy that don't share a mechanic. So, you know, that's just how Magic is designed.
And fortunately for every color, to help get those cards in your hand, everyone has a tutor.
Yeah, everybody's got some form of tutor, and tutors are
Except for red, I guess. Again, they got Gamble.
They have Gamble, and,
which
is
expensive.
They have super expensive ones.
Yeah.
But you're rarely going to play a one-color deck, although if you are, it's going to be red.
Yeah, correct. Or blue. You never know.
Yeah, black too, I guess.
Just all
but
the colors.
But tutors are super, super important in EDH, because it's effectively giving you redundancy where you wouldn't have it otherwise.
Yep.
And there are so many decks where it's like there's certain key cards that you really need to get.
Yeah.
And, you know, a tutor is basically another copy of those key cards.
Yep.
So as many tutors as you can have, and a tutor effect, sorry, we should say, is an effect that lets you search through your deck for a specific card. And sometimes it's
enchantment. Sometimes it's a spell. Or
sometimes it says search your library for an instant or sorcery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it says search your library for a creature. You know, but those are effects that let you go into your deck, find a specific card, and then get it into your hand as fast as possible. And those in EDH are extremely powerful.
Yeah, and not only that, having the option to choose whichever one, you know, hopefully your deck has answers or it has, you know, what card you need situationally to win in that, you know, particular whatever's going on everyone else's board. But tutors also, because they are one card that searches out another, essentially turn your deck from a 100 card deck to a 99 card deck, because now you have one card that is just dedicated to making your deck slightly smaller, and you're using it at a low cost point of, you know, 2 or 3 mana to get another card. And once that card's in your hand, then, you know, it's great. Now your deck's thinner, you have a slightly higher chance of drawing the thing that you really need the next turn.
I also think, like, because we've said a couple of things make the games go longer. Something like Diabolic Tutor, which is normally not playable because it costs 4 mana, is actually totally playable in EDH.
Completely. And it puts it in your hand.
Exactly. And because, again, you're going to build your deck around synergies and combos, you know, sometimes the tutor is just what you need to get the final piece of that combo, and then you have a chance to win that game. Or, like you said, it's an answer to something that's going to kill you next turn, and you need to go get it.
Especially if you can cast it at instant speed and ensure that that's going to be your next draw. Because for the most part, tutors outside of Diabolic and Demonic put the cards at the top of your library.
Right. So you're going to need one more
Correct.
Turn. Again, we've talked a little bit about it, but ramp is really important because the games go long. And because, in general, like we said, you're going to be like suddenly bursting out with like a big combo or a big creature or something that's going to like sort of out of nowhere become a threat and immediately do damage. Sometimes an immense amount of damage, and sometimes just kill your opponent outright. And usually you need a lot of mana to do that, and you need access to that mana all at once in one turn. So ramp cards like Gilded Lotus, Thrawn Dynamo, Soul Ring.
Soul Ring is the number one ramp.
Yeah, and those are all artifacts that you generally need to go in almost every deck, because every deck needs access to a lot of mana sort of later on in the game, so that they can suddenly burst forward with, you know, with their combo or their synergy or whatever, and suddenly like end the game, or at least kill one player, or or catch you back up or whatever. But you're gonna need
that mana.
You're gonna need a lot of mana at some point, like suddenly. Yeah.
And it's almost all colorless. I think Gilded Lotus is by far my favorite, just because you can fix a little bit. Yeah. You can choose any color, you know, that you want it to be. But yeah, you're gonna need that colorless mana, and you're gonna need it in those bursts too. And you know, those cards are great too, because even if you don't use it and you have something like a Grim Monolith out or something like a vault that needs mana to get untapped, you know, you can leave the artifacts up and tap them. And having mana up in response to something is also a great way to defend yourself in EDH.
And even just normal mana rocks like Chromatic Lantern, that turns all your lands into whatever color mana you want, but it also right. gives you one mana, or there's the Darksteel
Ingot.
Yeah, but it gives you one mana of any color. Like those are totally like playable in EDH because that's ramp. It gives you one extra mana one turn before you would have it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and it's indestructible.
It's technically more protected than your lands are.
Yeah. So ramp is very important. You know, don't skimp on ramp. Another thing I would say is like don't skimp on your mana base. You see this sometimes. People who like build a deck and they haven't thought out their mana base well enough. So EDH, the games are longer. We've said it many times. And man, it sucks if you don't have the mana to play Magic. Yeah, because you can sit there for like the whole game. And people may not kill you because you don't have a lot of mana, so you're not threatening. But it's not a whole lot of fun. So
As D put it, it's the worst thing to do is sit down to play Magic and be unable to play Magic.
So make sure you have enough lands. Generally, the number is around 37.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that, you know, whatever commander you choose and whatever colors you choose, you have mana. You know, you have lands that
do tap for both.
That tap for multiple colors. Yeah. You know, you have multiples of those lands.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't and you're not going to go get those, you know, maybe your collection's small, then maybe the way to build your commander deck is literally to look at what kind of mana that you've got, what kind of two color dual land type stuff you've got, and build
work around that.
Yes, and work from there.
Yeah, and for the most part, if you don't have the money to buy some of the more expensive dual lands and stuff, there are a lot that are on the lower price range. And of course, all the guild gates from like Return to Ravnica, those all tap for duels. Even though they come in tapped, it still is, you know, a better fixer than drawing those two separate lands for to just get that option of choosing between two colors.
Yeah, exactly. And coming into play tapped is actually in EDH is not that big of a deal because again, the games go long. So, you know, if you're one turn behind, which is basically what a land coming into play tapped is, it's not a big deal in general.
Yeah.
Like, it's rarely going to be like, man, if I had just had a land that didn't come into play tapped, I would have won that game. That almost never happens.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever come up against that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes you're like, if I just had more land, I would have won. But usually them coming to play tapped doesn't hurt you that much. So, because by the time that, like, you don't lose on turn four. It just doesn't happen, generally.
It can.
I've seen
but
it happen.
It doesn't happen often.
Yeah, it's more rare. So
Jiki Jiki is the only way I've ever made that dream come true.
I don't know. I've seen Sarah send it with a Sword of Light and Shadow.
That's right. And that happened to two people, actually. Yeah, turn four and turn five.
That was fun.
It was just game over.
Yeah, it was kind of awesome, but it was... Anyway.
I'm just glad I got to play another game right after that. that's really the end story there.
And sort of the last thing I would say about having 100 cards and no duplicates and how that affects the game is that, like, milling effects are pretty much out. I mean, they're pretty weak because
100 cards, that's just tough to get through.
So milling is literally, like, when an opponent has to take cards from their deck and put it directly onto their graveyard. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of cards that do it. Millstone being one, Keening Stone being another. But when we talk about milling means trying to make their deck completely gone so that it's all in their graveyard. And then if you don't know this, if you ever have to draw a card in Magic but your deck has no cards in it, you automatically lose. Magic cards weren't designed with a 100 card deck in mind, so they weren't balanced for it. Yeah, exactly. So, and then you, on top of that, instead of just having to mill out one person, you potentially have to mill out like four people. Just if you're thinking about doing a milling deck, I mean, I'm not saying don't do it, maybe it'll be awesome, just, you know, in general, just having a couple mill effects, like the whole deck would have to be milling.
Yeah, exactly. And cards that took advantage of it. So cards like when a creature is put into a graveyard or like a number
counts
of
creatures.
Right,
counts
all creatures and stuff. Then, yeah, sure, you have more of an option there. But then you're almost at the same time. It's like, what if you're playing against an opponent that just doesn't have the main creatures?
You know, or what if you have a playing against an opponent that wants stuff in their graveyard?
Exactly.
Listen, milling can be cool. In general, milling works this way anyway. Like, you're either all in on milling or you're not doing any milling at all.
Right.
But
exactly.
I'm just saying milling is way harder in EDH.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. Okay, so another thing that's different about Commander than other forms of Magic is the Commander itself. It's a card that you just always, more or less, always have access to.
Correct. It starts in the quote-unquote Command Zone, which is it's been around
forever. That's the name of a really cool podcast, too, I think.
Yeah, that's a great name.
It's a great name.
The Command Zone. I could see just the sign in neon above this.
In lights.
Yeah, exactly.
Surrounded by stars.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but this gives you a way to build consistency into your deck, again, because you don't have the redundancy. It's not always consistent, but the commander, you know, you're always going to have. So maximizing your commander, making it central to your deck, you know, building around its mechanic, building synergies around your commander is a really good way to sort of make your deck, you know, hum every time you play it.
Yep. It's sort of, it's not necessarily the gasoline, but it definitely, you know, it makes your deck go. You know, if you get your commander out and your cards in your deck hopefully should complement the commander but be powerful on their own to work without it, you know, that's when, you know, it's like you're throwing on lighter fluid to a fire. And that's when things really spark and get going. Is it should be when your commander's out. Sometimes, though, like I've seen you play decks with color combinations just because...
You don't always have to build your deck around your commander. You know, there's kind of like two kinds of commander deck, I think. Yeah. And one is like where the commander is very central to the deck, and the other is where the commander's kind of just allowing you to play certain colors that you want to play.
Yeah.
And both are fine.
And can help out when they come out.
Yeah. You know, I do think, you know, you can learn lessons from both. The best decks are probably ones that lean heavily on their commander, but not solely on their commander. Because if you got to be cautious not to be too focused on your commander, because there are a lot of ways that sort of hose decks that are like, if their commander's not out, they can't win.
Right, exactly. You know? Because, and you don't want to be stuck in the water.
If somebody hinders you, which is a counter spell that takes the card it countered and puts it on the bottom of the library, like all of a sudden, like, I don't have access to my commander all the time.
I had to take him out of his little case and I had to put him in my deck.
Yeah, and so what happens is that, you know, now if my deck doesn't work without access to my commander, then I'm just dead in the water there.
Yep.
So I like to build my deck so that whatever mechanic that I'm taking, that I'm abusing that the commander has, I also have other ways to get that mechanic into play without my commander.
Yeah, those are just win conditions, really. Ways for your deck to take the game.
That don't include your commander. You want win conditions that don't require your commander in play to do.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of a big one.
Yeah. And one of those deck types you talked about, which relies heavily on the commander, is ones that use the commander as their biggest weapon.
Yeah.
You know, as their battering ram to take you down. Because in commander, you only need to take 21 damage from the card itself to lose.
Yeah, so if the commander deals 21 damage to you, you automatically lose. Doesn't
even
matter
if your life total is above. Yeah.
So that's actually another thing that's totally different than other Magic formats. And what that does is it means that life gain is just... It's not that it's bad.
It's different.
It's just weaker.
But life gain in standard as well isn't necessarily the best thing. Because it's putting you further from death, but it isn't putting your opponent closer to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so life gain is never great. Especially pure life gain. Like a card that just gains you life and does nothing else. That's pretty much... It's not good. Don't play those cards.
Yeah.
But
it's going to make people want to just kill you more because they're like, this guy has more life than everyone. I guess I'll attack him.
Especially
and not feel
with new mechanics like Dethrone, which actually cause cards to target the player with most life. Life gain's even less powerful than it's ever been in Commander. But also, just you can be at 122 life and somebody can just all of a sudden pull out a Rafik and, you know, with haste and hit you for 22 commander damage in a single turn and you're just dead. It doesn't matter how much life you have.
Yeah, exactly. So there's always ways to finish you off regardless of how much life you have. I think that's the thing. It's like with commander, once you pass turn 5 or turn 6, turn 7, you're literally almost always on the brink of death. You may not know it, but there is the possibility that amongst the 4 or 3 people that you're playing against, someone's going to have that option to do it.
Right.
So life gain isn't the most important in this case.
Yeah, I would say just gaining life in general, don't look at it and go like, awesome, I'm going to gain a bunch of life and then they can't kill me, because that's not true. Life gain is still okay if it's part of a combo or part of a synergy.
Right.
You know, there are cards that say, oh, every time you gain life, your opponents take that much damage. Mm-hmm. Every time you gain life, you make a 4/4 angel. Every time you gain life, you draw cards, whatever that is. If there's synergy there, that's great. If it's doing other things. So now it's not just pure life gain. It's what we call incidental life gain, which means the life gain is not actually the effect that I'm most excited about. But
it's a happy
side
effect.
Yes, exactly.
It's a cherry on top of what you're really trying to get at there.
Exactly. So incidental life gain, good. Pure life gain, not so good.
Yep. And that kind of leads into our next point, which is you have to play to your play group.
And the meta.
Yeah. And when we say meta, it just means what is happening within your world of Commander. You know, do you go to Friday Night Magic and you play different people with different decks every time? Or do you play with the same sort of 3 to 4 group of friends that you know what they're going to bring to the table? Or you know that this guy loves to do, you know, artifact destruction, or you know that this guy loves to go infinite, you know? So
I know that he plays this specific commander, or, you know, he has these two decks. And yes, designed specifically for your play group. And that also includes how many people are playing. So you're going to design a deck totally different if your play group is just you and your buddy. If you're playing 1v1 all the time, then a lot of the stuff we've just said is out. You know, if you're playing 1v1, you need 2 drops, you need 3 drops, you need efficient creatures. Yeah. Those games are going to come down to just attacking and blocking, because it's more like a regular game of Magic. You know, there's not going to be politics.
There's no external threats. You only have one person to go at, and that person only has one person.
You don't have to worry about pissing them off and making them want to attack you. They already want to kill you as much as possible because it's 1v1.
Yep.
Even 3-player is going to be a little bit faster. Once you get 4 or 5, now all of a sudden you can hide a little bit more. You can do some politics.
You can play with even less powerful commanders in the early game that get much more powerful later on.
Exactly. You know? So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're building your deck is how many people am I going to be playing with on a regular basis?
Right.
And then...
even so, a lot of our points still, go through, which is you're going to get disrupted. You're going to get people trying to wrath effects you, kill things, get rid of your key combo pieces. So you need to have answers. And that's just a general, you're going to have answers. Maybe you won't have specific answers for different play groups. Like maybe if you're playing with a bunch of guys that don't necessarily going to attack one thing, you don't need to have an answer for that specifically. But you're going to need to have, in general, answers or cards that you own that you can slot in, knowing what's going to come at you potentially.
Yeah, and it's like you said, if you're a person that plays with like the same group of five guys every time, you're going to know pretty well what it is that they play. You're going to be like, well, nobody uses any graveyard recursion. I don't need a single piece of graveyard hate in any of my decks because no one is using that. Mm-hmm. Or, nobody plays with any artifacts of any importance. Well, then I don't need to put a single, shatter or destroy artifact type effect in any of my decks.
Right.
But if I'm playing in a couple of multiple groups, I'm going to play, at my local gaming store or Friday Night Magic, and I could face unknown decks. Now, all of a sudden, my decks need to have a wide variety of disruption so that they have a chance to handle a lot of stuff coming at them, a lot of different stuff that I can't predict.
Mm-hmm. And even just looking at the colors of a commander should give you some clues as to what could be coming your way. If the guy's blue, they're going to have counters. They're going to have some kind of responses to things. And so the way you play obviously changes. But, that goes for regular Magic, too. You should always keep an eye out for open mana. You should always keep an eye out for who's eyeing what, who's... I mean... As much as we all like to think that we're super professional when we play Magic, I mean, we all have our pretty bad poker giveaways where we're just like eyeing one card in our hand and we got that mana untapped. I mean, something's going to happen. So just make sure you're always playing to the meta.
Yeah. And another thing is after you've been playing with the group for a little while, you know what cards they have, how they like to play them,
mm-hmm.
The weaknesses of your deck, and how they're going to attack those weaknesses. So now you get into the sort of countering their counters. No, I don't mean counter spells. I just mean ways around whatever they're going to do to try and stop you. So if mm-hmm. they're going to do what we call tuck effects, hinder, which puts your commander on the bottom of your graveyard, now all of a sudden you might need a couple extra tutors or some other way to go find your commander once they put it deep into your deck. You might need like a Fauna Shaman, which is a card that lets you discard a card from hand, a creature card from hand, and then go search your deck for any another, creature card.
Yep.
You might put in some cards that are going to let you go find it. So it's like, they think they're going to get you with their hinder and they're going to put your commander on the bottom of your deck. And all of a sudden you go, nope, I'm just going to go find him again right away and put him right back out.
Yep,
And those can be, once you know how they're going to counter you, now you can start to, counter move their counters.
Yeah.
And that's what the meta is.
Yeah. It's being able to be one step ahead of your opponents without hindering yourself. Using hinder, of course, not the card hinder, but actually hindering yourself.
Exactly.
So that's a lot of stuff.
We
covered a whole lot of stuff there, and it may seem a little daunting, especially if you've never even played Commander before, let alone even played Magic. Who knows who's listening to this podcast right now? But let's actually talk about a Commander. Let's build a deck. Let's see what we got, and let's see.
And we can see some of these philosophies in action,
and
how we sort of think about them and how we apply them. Correct. So what we've chosen as our commander for the Commander Spotlight today is Marchesa the Black Rose.
Ooh la la.
Fancy
new mythic.
Yeah, she's from the new Conspiracy set. She's in the Grixis colors. What we call Grixis is black, blue, and red, and one colorless mana. So she costs 4 mana total. She's
which is a great cost.
3/3.
Great cost for a commander.
Cheap commanders are, well, they're good. I mean, some expensive commanders are good too. A lot of commanders are good. Anyway, I do like a cheap commander though. So do you want to read her?
Yes. Marchesa the Black Throne, legendary creature. She's a human wizard. Dethrone. Whenever this creature attacks the player with the most life or tied for the most life, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Other creatures you control have Dethrone. And her third ability, whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, return that card to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step.
That's a lot of stuff. Okay, well let's start with Dethrone. The Dethrone mechanic
introduced in Conspiracy.
Yeah, is a new one, and it basically wants you to attack the player with the most life, and it will grow your creatures. Now Marchesa uses Dethrone twice. She herself has Dethrone. She also gives all of your other creatures Dethrone. So anytime you attack the player with the most life or tied for the most life, all your guys grow.
They get +1/+1 at the point of attacking. So a 2/2 becomes a 3/3 immediately.
Yes.
You know, it's not added at the end of the turn. It happens as soon as they attack.
As soon as you turn them sideways, they get bigger. Yeah. So what do we think about this, Jimmy? Is this a good effect?
I don't know. You know, in multiplayer, it's a fun effect. I think Dethrone, the idea of Dethrone is really wonderful. I think it's great for balancing out games, and it's great for also really fun political discussions. Whenever we draft Conspiracy and Dethrone comes up, it's always fun pointing at other people like, oh, go at him first, even though we're all tied for the most life right now. But I'm not sure how useful it is in the long run.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like effects that don't let me choose how to play my cards.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, and Dethrone is an effect that it makes it feel like if I don't attack the player with the most life, then I'm somehow not maximizing the card. Mm-hmm. And it's tough because I want to be able to attack the player that is strategically the best player to attack right now.
Correct.
And Dethrone sort not of works against that.
Yeah.
I would say that with Marchesa, you know, the Dethrone effect itself is something that I would consider secondary to how I would want to build the deck.
Right.
I wouldn't want to build the deck based upon that Dethrone mechanic.
I agree. And I think, you know, giving creatures +1/+1 counters is great. By itself, it doesn't seem like it's that much. You know, you already have a lot of creatures out on the board, and giving them +1/+1 isn't going to beat, you know, when someone drops an 8/8 tier 3/3. So more importantly, I think it's definitely her third text.
Yeah, so just to go over it again, it's whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, return that card to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. So let's talk about how exactly this works. You have a creature. It has a +1/+1 counter for whatever reason. Doesn't matter. You don't have to get the +1/+1 counter because of the Dethrone mechanic. So you can get it from another source. It doesn't matter as long as it's got a +1/+1 counter on it. Then it dies for any reason. That means it goes into your graveyard and
it
stays
in your graveyard.
Yep. And there's a timestamp trigger that's on there, and at the beginning of your end step, or whatever the next end step is, actually. Sorry. So if it's during an opponent's turn.
Right. If they attack and you chump block something
And you block something, but it has a 1/1 counter, that means it just comes back into play. So anything where it says enter the battlefield will... Mm-hmm.
Enters play.
Enters play will go off. And also when it dies, anything that says leaves the battlefield of the card, mm-hmm. that will trigger. So, you know, immediately that sort of makes me think of, you know, enter the battlefield effects might be strong with her.
Right.
Leave the battlefield effects.
It's also nice because it's talking about what you just said where... you know, Dethrone is nice, but it doesn't give you control over who you're attacking. You know, right. It wants you to attack someone instead of letting you choose, but with the idea that it's just if there's a +1/+1 counter on that creature, then they die, that gives you control, saying, hey, now there are cards that get to put +1/+1 counters or things, and that opens up a whole new world of just stuff that has nothing to do with Dethrone, but all about the idea that you can recur them back to the battlefield after they've died.
Yeah, that's what I think the recursion aspect of her abilities is sort of the most powerful one. It's, you know, to be able to make your creatures so that they basically nobody can ever get rid of them permanently.
Yep.
Can be pretty powerful. You can abuse it.
Yeah. Now I have a couple rules questions about her actually. How does she protect herself? Let's say Marchesa herself gets tragically slipped.
Okay.
And
so
enters the
if Marchesa has a +1/+1 counter on her, then at the time she dies, she will trigger her own ability. So she will bring herself back. And the trigger is, again, it's a delayed trigger that goes off at the next end step.
So does it enter the quote-unquote stack as soon as she dies, that it's already there?
Yes. And then when she dies at that moment, she's dead and on the battlefield at the same time, sort of. And mm-hmm. then so she triggers herself.
Before she hits the graveyard. And her
and then she'll go to the graveyard, but that stack, that delayed trigger is on the stack. And then when the end step hits, that trigger triggers, and she comes back. And so if somebody Wrath affected and you had, say, two creatures and her and they all had +1/+1 counters, so she and the other two creatures would come back. Okay, so given her mechanics, you know, I think Jimmy and I, we've both, you know, delved into how to build a deck and we sort of came to similar conclusions.
Well, the first thing when I saw her was like, I want to build a deck with you because you look like you're ready to play Commander with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what it is.
So I think the first thing we both thought of was like, we need to put in creatures that come into play with +1/+1 counters already.
Right.
That I don't have to attack anybody. I don't have to do anything. They just put them into play and they get +1/+1 counters, or they get +1/+1 counters on their own somehow.
Right.
So there's sort of three main mechanics, I think, that that we talked about that do that. So one is the unleash mechanic.
Right. When a creature enters play, you can choose to unleash it. It gets a +1/+1 counter, but it cannot defend. So
correct.
It is just, it's rampaging. It's ready to attack.
Right. But it has a +1/+1 counter and nobody can really stop it.
Correct.
I mean, they can counter it, but that's about it.
Yes.
There's the undying mechanic.
Right, when a creature dies, if it's for the first time, I believe, yep. it gets to come back from the graveyard with a +1/+1 counter. Or -1/-1 counter.
No, +1/+1.
+1/+1. Yeah. Right, I'm persist thinking of persist, is minus, yeah. correct, yeah.
Undying is, if it didn't have a +1/+1 counter on it, then it comes back with a +1/+1 counter on it.
So essentially, it has a +1/+1 counter on it because it does Marchesa's effect without actually having to need her on the board to have it come back.
Right. That's a pretty strong one. And then there's what's called the modular mechanic.
Ah, yes, modular.
Yeah, which is an artifact mechanic which says that it comes in with X amount of +1/+1 counters on it, depending on what the modular is. So if it's modular 2, it comes in with two +1/+1 counters. Yeah. And then when it dies, you can put those +1/+1 counters on another artifact creature, but it'll die with a +1/+1 counter on it. So correct. It'll come back with Marchesa and it will again mm-hmm. reactivate modular and it'll have its counters again.
And in the, you know, when it someone that gets wrathed and the creature doesn't have a +1/+1 counter on, you can have it die in that order, throw a +1/+1 counter on, and yep. then have that creature die. So
exactly.
you can save a creature. It's almost like he's throwing a safety net
yep.
to catch that guy.
Yeah, if you have other artifact creatures in the deck. So to me, this is the strongest of the three. I think Undyne is probably the second strongest, mm-hmm. and Unleash is sort of the least strong because he can't defend if you put him in the +1/+1 counters.
Correct.
So,
and for the most part, Unleash is I think, a very much a limited format card, and sometimes standard as well.
It's very aggressive.
Very aggressive, yeah.
So if you're going aggro, EDH might not be the greatest format to do that.
I think modular is definitely the most powerful of the three because it also has no color. Being artifact creatures, it is a little limited. They can only put on other artifact creatures, but there are plenty of powerful artifacts creatures out there that you can do
well,
this
also
with.
Your total power and toughness on the board should stay the same. Like you, a guy dies, you take his counters, you put it on something else.
Right.
And then he dies, you take his counters and put on something else. You know, if you have a lot of modular guys out, all of a sudden, like, they're killing your guys, you keep getting stronger, you keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
Because your guy comes back in, he has more counters now, and he transferred his old counters to somebody else. So, you know, your board presence just sort of can grow and grow.
Yeah, it's important to note that most of the modular creatures are 0/0s. So without modular, they would die upon hitting the battlefield because they have no toughness.
Right, but they have modular, so they never, they always enter with +1/+1 counters. Yeah. The other thing we need for the deck is we do want some effects that add +1/+1 counters to mm-hmm. to anything because we want to be able to protect Marchesa.
Right.
You know.
Because you will run into a situation where you just can't get that counter out. And you're going to want to have more than one option of putting it on there. Maybe you won't have, you know, the combination of a modular guy and a sack outlet to get rid of him and put the counters on someone else. So you're going to need other options to do it. Dragonblood is one. It's a 3-drop artifact that you can tap for pay 3 and tap it, and you just put a +1/+1 counter on a creature.
Yeah, which is great because you can put Marchesa out and then put a counter on her right away, and now you've just protected her, like, mm-hmm. immediately. There's another one called Unspeakable Symbol, which you it's an enchantment. It's a black enchantment, and you pay 3 life, and you get a +1/+1 counter on a target creature. And you can do that at instant speed, too. Yeah.
And you can do it as many times as you want, as long as you have the life for it.
Yeah, true. So even if somebody was at, like, you know, they're just a couple points away from being dead, and you attack, and they don't block, and then you go, well, I'm just going to play 6 life, put 2+1/+1 counters, and kill you. That can happen.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, if something happens to kill your guy, and it's like, well, instant speed, I'm going to throw a counter on him
and
for just
him.
3 life. And especially if it's like a huge creature or something that they really want to get rid of, being able to just pay 3 life when you have 40 to begin with really isn't as significant, which is the nice part about Commander in that case.
Correct. And then, so then we're like, okay, we've got these creatures. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to recur. By recur, we mean they're going to be able to continue to return to the battlefield when they die because they have +1/+1 counters because of Marchesa. Now, what are we going to do with that? You know, it doesn't feel like we just want to be attacking.
Right.
You know, so I think the best thing to do is to find what we call sack outlets, so ways to sacrifice our own creatures. So we want to guarantee that they'll die mm-hmm. and that we get some effect when they do die because we know they're going to come back.
Yep.
So
that's essentially 2-for-1-ing. You know, you're getting an extra ability out of your card that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, it's even more than 2-for-1-ing because the cards, you didn't actually lose the card.
Yeah,
so it's like 1-for-0.
Yeah.
You know, so what are some of the sack outlets that we maybe can use?
Well, the one I have in front of me right now is Attrition, which is a black enchantment. It's 1 and 2 black, so 3 total. And all I have to do is just pay 1 black, and you sacrifice a creature, and you destroy target non-black creature. And that's fun.
I mean, it's great. You can do that as many times as you've got
black
creatures with 1/1 creatures.
Yep.
And
instant speed.
And your creature comes back. So what mm-hmm. you just did is you destroyed one of their creatures effectively for 1 mana.
Yeah. And the best time to do this, obviously, is right before your turn starts. You know, you've got stuff up, technically. Or, you know, if you want to do something, you know, you're going to...
Well, your card's going to come back during your end step, right?
Any end step.
Yeah, so you can do it on your turn.
Correct.
They come back during your end step. Now it's your next opponent's turn. Before his end step, you do it again.
Yeah.
They come back during his end step. Then it's your next opponent's turn.
Yep.
You know, you can potentially, even with just one creature with just Modular one. Out and Marchesa out, you can do it four times if there's four other players.
Yeah.
You know, for four black mana.
With the exact same creature each time.
Exactly. So it's very powerful. Another card we might use as a sac outlet is called Ashnod's Altar.
One of my favorite cards.
Yeah, you sacrifice a creature and you get two colorless mana.
Yeah.
So that's now great.
Two colorless mana for one creature?
Exactly. And now, what did we say earlier? What do we want in our deck? We want ramp.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got a sac outlet.
That gives us mana.
So it's doing double duty. It's acting as ramp, and it's also acting as our sacrifice outlet. So now all of a sudden, if I've got a modular creature out, I just effectively have two extra mana during my turn because I can sacrifice him for nothing because he's going to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big brother to Ashnod's Altar is Phyrexian Altar, where it's basically the same thing, but you get one color mana of any color you want. So that's straight up fixing. You can fix any color you need to, you know.
Another card I think that's pretty strong as a sac outlet is Phyrexian Tower. It's a legendary land. You tap it for either one colorless mana, or you tap it and you sacrifice a creature and you get two black mana. So this, actually, I really like cards like this because it serves three purposes now. It's a sac outlet, it's ramp, and it's a land.
Yep.
So it doesn't take the place in your deck of a normal card. It takes the place of a land.
Yeah.
It's just a land that also does something that you need your deck to do, which is sacrifice its own creatures. So that's a very strong card.
Right. There are actually a couple of lands that do this. Yeah. So there's lots of good stuff that can do it out there. Now, it may not be necessarily the cheapest option, but one other card that we have I think it's a common, right?
Yeah.
Infernal Tribute. Pay two. It's an enchantment. Sacrifice a card in play. Draw a card.
So, what did we say we want our decks to do? We want them to have ramp. We want them to have card draw.
Got to draw all the cards you can.
Yep.
Especially if you're behind.
So that card basically for you, if you have a modular card out, it says pay two, draw a card. Because you're going to sacrifice a modular card. It's going to come back during your end step.
Yeah.
Then you could do it again on your opponent's turn. So potentially if you add the mana, you could draw maybe four cards by the time it's your turn again.
Absolutely.
One creature.
If you have Ashnod's Altar out,
yeah,
that's the two mana. You sacrifice one of your guys, a modular guys, and then you have the mana to do it to the other one.
Yeah, so if you have two modular guys out, you have Ashnod's Altar and Infernal Tribute. You basically free for no extra mana, just every turn draw a card.
Draw a card, which
that's every player's turn. That's not your turn. That's again, if there's five players, that's five cards by the time it gets back around to you. If you're drawing five cards and all your other guys are drawing one card, I like your chances in that game.
I like your chances a lot. Even if your deck isn't necessarily the strongest, you're going to have the most options to go by.
Right.
Make sure if you guys are really focusing on card draw too, to have cards that expand your hand size. Because there's nothing worse than having 20 cards in your hand and you're like, God, wasn't that cool? And then it's like, hey, you got to discard 13 of them now. Yeah. Have fun with that, buddy.
That doesn't ever bother me. I'll just pick the best seven.
Right?
I'm good.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the big thing is you still are thinning your deck out and you're increasing the chances of you getting the money cards you need.
There's going to be certain, really important cards.
Yeah, absolutely.
So another thing I would look for is cards that recur themselves. Because, like we said earlier, I don't want to be in a situation where Marchesa isn't out and I'm just dead in the water. Like, none of my cards work now because I don't have Marchesa. Marchesa is the thing that's making the modular cards bounce back from the graveyard. But there are cards that bounce themselves back from the graveyard. I'm talking about a card like Reassembling Skeleton.
That's right. He likes to be in the graveyard, actually.
Exactly. If he's ever in your graveyard, you pay two mana and you return him to the battlefield tapped, which is just awesome because for two mana, you can sack him. And then for two mana, you bring him back. You could sack him again. Yep. Bring him back for as much mana as you got. So if you want to draw cards, it's just four mana now to draw another card. Four mana, draw another card. I mean, sometimes you're just going to want to do that. You know, there's another card.
Squee, Goblin Nabob. He's a fun little goblin. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may return Squee, Goblin Nabob from your graveyard to your hand. He's just a persistent little goblin.
Yep.
He's always going to come back to your hand. He's also great because he is that chump blocker. You know, he defeats the guy that's a 15-15 guy, that monster that's just rolling on the ground. Just throw this little goblin in front of him, get to play him next turn if you want to.
Oh, you can still sack him too. You go,
correct.
I'm going to block during the block phase, and then before damage is dealt, I'll sack him to my Infernal Tribute. I'll draw two cards, and then your guy does no damage to me.
It's cool. Once you start really getting in Commander, this is what I found, is that there are there's always another little space in time for you to do something.
Correct.
Which is, before he actually dies, I'm going to sacrifice him to something else after he's done the majority of the fighting, which, you know, it realistically doesn't make any sense. If this guy just got run over by a giant elephant, you're not going to be able to sacrifice his dead body. But in Magic, you get the chance to do that. So you should always keep your eye out for stuff like this, because it just makes your deck that much more powerful when you have not only an answer for something or something that can defend something, but it does something else for you.
Yeah, that's what you want, like those bonus effects, those nice upsides. Okay, so let's move on to another area, which is Synergy.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, actually, before we do it, I want to talk about one more card that's okay. All about recurrence, but in this case, other people's stuff, which is Grey Betrayal, which is this awesome set. It's expensive. It's a 7-drop enchantment, but anytime a creature dies, it comes back into play under your control, which is just pretty bonkers if you have Marchesa. Because I think one of the things that you can also build this deck around, if you really want to, is stealing creatures, putting +1/+1 counters on them, sacking them, and from that point on, when they come back, they are permanently yours.
Yeah, there is. If you notice the wording on Marchesa, it says, when a creature you control dies, return that creature to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. So it doesn't return under its owner's control. It returns under your control,
right.
So some cards you may not think of that you could use are what we call threaten effects.
Mm-hmm.
Those are effects that sort of, there's a lot of them in red, and what they do is they say untap your opponent's creature, take control of them until end of turn,
it gains haste. Yeah.
So usually you'd have to give it back at the end of turn. Well, it's got haste, right? So you attack the guy that's got the most life,
mm-hmm.
puts the dethrone counter on it. Now you sacrifice it to one of your sac outlets, and it comes back to play under your control for good.
Yep.
So that's a way to steal their stuff.
And of course you get that extra bonus effect from just sacking it.
Correct.
That's awesome.
So it's just good on all level. You basically killed one of their creatures and then created a copy of it and got a sac, whatever, you know, draw a card or kill another creature with
non-black
that card
creature,
attrition,
right.
Or, you know, got some extra mana or whatever you did. So that
you're definitely going to draw a lot of hate.
Threaten effects are actually something you may not think of, but are strong with Marchesa as well.
Yeah. So let's talk Synergy.
Okay, so we're killing our own creatures, and they're returning to the battlefield. So some of the effects we might think of are anything that says when a creature dies.
Mm-hmm. Or enters the battlefield, it does this, comes into play.
Yep. So let's look at, like, I don't know.
Probably one of the strongest gods in EDH. His name is Purphoros. He's the god of the forge. He's the closest to the Greek god Hephaestus, as far as I'm concerned. He is a 4-drop. He's pretty cheap. He's indestructible.
He's straight nasty.
He isn't a creature unless you have devotion to red equal to 5 or more. Which is good, because it means less ways for people to kill him, because his most important effect is whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent.
Yeah, that's every one of your opponents.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of words on there I really like, which is each and your control, and enters the battlefield. All those words are excellent, and of course deals 2 damage across the board.
So how this would work is, let's say you've got 2 creatures with Modular out, and you have Marchesa out, and now you sacrifice your 2 Modular creatures. During your end step, they come back in. They've just come into play. That means there's 2 creatures coming into play. Purphoros triggers twice and does 4 damage to every opponent.
Yep.
You do that on your turn. Then it's the next turn. You do that again.
Same thing.
That's
4
more damage. If there's 4 players in the game, you have done about 20 damage by the time that it comes back to you.
Yeah.
To everybody.
Yeah.
So that means if there's 4 players in the game, you've just done 80 damage in one rotation of the table. So, you know, Purphoros is extremely strong. Now, don't be surprised you put Purphoros out and everybody starts to try and kill you. So don't put Purphoros out until you're pretty sure you can kill everybody in one shot, or kill most of them.
Yeah, or at least bring them down to the point where even if they do get rid of everything, you are able to still beat them just purely on life alone.
Right.
You know, having just a better board state, or just having more things at your disposal.
A good way to sort of win the game would be to play Purphoros and then to play this next card.
Oof.
Dictate of Erebos. It says, whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent sacrifices a creature.
Ouch.
So again,
hey, that guy that was indestructible or hexproof,
they got to sacrifice him. I'm not targeting him.
Yeah, exactly.
So the way this would work is, if you add 2 creatures with Modular, you sacrifice them to your sac outlet, maybe you draw a couple cards, and all of a sudden 2 of your creatures just died. So every player at the table has to sacrifice 2
of their
creatures. Then on the next player's turn, you do it again. So you could kill 8 of everybody's creatures.
And do damage to them with Purphoros if you have both out.
Yeah, if you have both out. Yeah. I would say if you have 9 mana, playing Purphoros and Dictate of Erebos on the same turn, and then you really need only maybe two creatures with modular, or two creatures with unleash, two creatures that you can sack and they're guaranteed to keep returning. Yeah.
This is one of my favorite kind of combos in Commander 2, which is, it's not infinite. It doesn't go balls to the wall crazy, but it does. It completely changes the game around if you're able to get it off.
And it's really actually pretty hard to stop, because somebody, Purphoros himself is a, he's an enchantment, so he's hard to target because he's not a creature.
And he's indestructible.
And he's indestructible, so he's a lot, there's not a lot of exile enchantments. There are some, but most people don't run them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dictate of Erebos is also an enchantment. So unless they have instant speed enchantment removal in their hand right now, you could very possibly just kill everybody.
At the same time, Dictate of Erebos is also a card that has flash on it. So you technically have instant speed on this enchantment.
Probably the best way to play it would be at the player before you, your turn, during his end step, you flash in Dictate of Erebos.
Sack some
and
guys.
Then during your turn, you play Purphoros. So you don't even need 9 mana untapped. You really only need like 6 or so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can start the Dictate of Erebos party train as soon as you flash it in.
Yeah.
You can say, all right, cool. He comes in on your step. It's my turn next turn, but I'm going to start do 2 guys. Everyone has to do it. And then,
I'll play Purphoros, and now you start taking damage and sacrificing your own guys.
So by the time your turn is ended, you've done 4, and very little options are available to people because all their turns have passed. Most of their mana may be tapped, and the answers to get rid of that aren't going to be there.
Yeah, that is straight nasty. So, you know, go out and try and do that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some tutors that may be more specific to this deck than others. Fabricate is a blue tutor that says you can go and find an artifact. So you're going to have modular creatures. You're going to have, we talked about earlier, Dragonblood, which is an artifact that gives counters. You're going to have a lot of artifacts in this deck. So that is a way to go find specifically artifacts.
Yep. And another card that I actually did not know existed until right now, and I saw it sitting in front of me, is Diabolic Intent, which is a sorcery that costs 2, so the same as Demonic Tutor, and it does the exact same thing, except as an additional cost, you need to sacrifice a creature. But as we've talked about already, sacrificing a creature ain't no big thing.
Actually, you want to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's actually a bonus in this deck, is like sacrificing your own creature. It's very powerful. It can let you find anything. It can let you go find Purphoros.
The thing. It's not limited to a card type. It's not limited to a color. It's not limited to anything but your own. You can even find a land if you really need it, you know?
Correct. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, like we said, we always want card draw.
Yep.
We have a sack outlet that gives us some card draw, but maybe there's some other cards. There's a card called River Kelpie.
Ah, yeah.
River Kelpie says, whenever River Kelpie or another permanent is put into play from a graveyard, draw a card. What this means is every time one of your modular guys jumps back into play from the graveyard,
you get some cards.
You get to draw a card. So just having River Kelpie on the battlefield means every time you sack them and they bounce back, you draw cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's card draw. It's it's an effect that you can just repeat over and over again. Very powerful.
Yeah. Not to mention River Kelpie also has the added bonus of being a persist card, which means it does it to himself.
Yep.
You know, when he comes back into play, you get a draw card from him.
And he's hard to get rid of. They got to kill him twice.
Kill him twice.
If you can put a +1/+1 counter on him.
It negates the counter and you get to do it all over again.
Exactly.
Another card that is on here that we don't have in front of us is Muldrifter, which is great. It's just a little floating little fish, and when he enters the battlefield, you draw 2 cards.
Correct. And if you can put a counter on him, now you can sack him, and he comes back and you draw 2 more cards.
Yep. And if you combine that with other stuff, could you imagine the Mold Drifter that was making everyone sack a creature, this small little fish with wings, and he was just doing so much damage to everyone else and giving you 2 cards every time.
Yeah, potentially you could have a card who's a 2/2 flyer, but what he does is he draws you 2 cards, he makes them sacrifice a creature, and he does 2 damage to every opponent. You know, that's just like, once you get the synergies into play, the deck's very powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And this last card I have in front of me, which is one of my favorite artifacts, is Skullclamp, which is a 1-drop artifact, and it costs 1 to equip it. And it gives a creature +1/-1. And it, at first, it's like, okay, that's interesting. It doesn't seem that great. It gives him a little power, and it takes a little toughness away, like a Skullclamp would. But the important thing is, when a crypt creature is put into a graveyard, draw 2 cards. So that means anytime you have a creature with a that just has toughness of 1, you can for one mana draw 2 cards.
Yeah,
it kills
the equip cost is 1.
Yeah,
actually, you don't even need it to have a power of 1 because you can sacrifice the creature.
That's right. That's right. You can equip anything and still sack it. So
what you want to do is take Skullclamp, you put it on your modular creature, and if the Skullclamp itself doesn't kill it, then you sacrifice it. And then you draw a card.
Yeah.
Most times, get the sacrifice effect too.
Yeah, exactly. There are some modular guys that just have 1/+1/+1 counter.
Yeah, correct.
And those are great guys to put on. And we also have that reanimating skeleton too, which, you know, you can just bring him back. And it's not the cheapest thing, but at the very least, it is something that you can do on a repeat basis as long as you
I mean, if it's early in the game or you don't have anything else going on, like you need to find the important cards in your deck, then Skullclamp is a good way to start finding it. And at that point, you don't care as much. Like, I don't care if I pay 3 mana to draw a card. I just need to draw some cards.
Yeah, to draw 2 cards, no less.
Yeah, true. So let's talk about some cards that like you might think were kind of good in the deck, but really aren't that good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing, like my initial thought was like haste creatures when I thought about it, or giving all my creatures haste because of the dethrone mechanic. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, oh, I want to drop a creature and I want to attack immediately with it so that it gets the plus counter, one counter.
Gets that protection.
Exactly. But really like it's not super powerful because for one, if you do that a couple times, you're going to be the one with the most life and then it's not going to work anymore because exactly. dethrone actually counts yourself. So you can be at a point in the game where you can't attack the person with the most life because it's you.
Right.
So that hurts it. Also, attacking and blocking in general is just not super powerful in EDH.
Mm-hmm. And if it's not necessary, you know, if you're just dinging someone for two and you're getting a plus one counter, it's like, what did you really achieve? You made one person slightly angry at you and their life is 38 and yours is at 40. What yeah. do you do?
You just you know? Piss somebody off for no reason.
Right.
Yeah.
For what is essentially a negligible amount of damage. Oh, and another card that I actually have my Marchesa deck because I just want to see it happen. And that's my commander curse. As the Johnny side of me is Sage of Hours, which is a blue creature. Anytime you cast a spell that targets it, you get a +1/+1 counter on it. It's a card from Journey into Nyx. And if you can get 5 +1/+1 counters on it, you can remove all those and take an extra turn after this one. So it's very attractive. It's like, whoa, extra turns.
You always want extra turns.
Counters. It's like, it seems like it has all the things that you need in this deck. But if you think about, okay, well, there aren't too many ways to put +1/+1 counters on things. Now, if you have a modular sac outlet that you can just start popping things back and forth, that's great.
But he's not an artifact, so it's hard to move the modular counters onto him.
That's right, actually. You can't even get those counters on
them. There are cards that, there's a card called Liquid Metal Coating that can turn something into an artifact, so you can put that in.
Or a guy like Memnarch that can do it.
Yeah. So you could have some cards, and I think maybe those cards do belong in this deck anyway, just because Marchesa, you know, just the chance to turn her into an artifact is strong, but you have to put 5 on him, then you only get one turn. I just think it's really a long way to go, and it's unlikely that it's going to pay off for you. I get it, just to try and live the dream, like why not put it in there, but like, you know, if you're going to be sort of spiky about it, a little bit nuts and bolts, then you know, I don't think that's a card maybe that you want to put in there.
It, you know, I think there's something that exists for it that's efficient enough and fast enough that even a spike player would really like it. I just don't think it has been found yet.
There is a card that does sort of a similar thing, Jimmy, that I do think is, you know, maybe a win condition in this deck. It's called Time Sieve.
That's right.
Yeah.
You played it to a win last time.
What Time Sieve does is you tap it and you sacrifice 5 artifacts and then you get an extra turn after this one. Now, that seems like a high price, but remember our artifacts can return after they've died. So what you can do is if you have enough modular guys out, 5 to be exact.
Yeah.
Then you tap Time Sieve, you sacrifice those 5 artifacts. You get an extra turn after this one. All 5 of those artifacts return during your end step.
Yep.
So now on the next turn, you tap Time Sieve, you sacrifice those artifacts. So now you have unlimited turns. You're in an infinite combo loop with unlimited turns. You're going to win that game.
Mm-hmm. As long as people do not find a way to get rid of either Time Sieve or your artifacts.
They could exile one of your modular
guys. That's assuming they have the mana up because they're not drawing any cards at this point unless they have some of that.
But you just don't play Time Sieve until you look around and everybody's tapped out and it's your turn and you have 5 artifacts. And if you do that, you can basically kill everybody. Yeah. Some play groups don't.
It's a slow kill, but you can do it.
You can do it.
You still have to play correctly.
Some play groups look a little, they frown upon infinite combos, so watch out for that. But, you know, personally, I just think.
If you can get it off, hey, that's fun.
It requires 6 cards. Like, you know, nobody should be able to complain if you make an infinite combo that requires 6 cards. It's like you have plenty of chances to stop that from happening. And somebody's got to win it at some point, right?
Yeah, it's more like shame on you for not doing anything about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you see all these modular guys. Something's fishy. Something's going to happen here.
So, so let's talk about some ways that if I was playing against this deck, some things that I might want to use.
Mm-hmm. Well, for one, we talked about Tuck effects already. Uh-huh. Basically, can we put Marchesa away for good? You know, when she dies, she might come back. When she gets put in the command zone for whatever reason, she's just going to cost 6 the next time.
Right.
You know, she's not an expensive commander, so hinder. You know, it's a counterspell that takes her and slips her to the bottom of your deck.
And this is one of those decks that relies pretty heavily on its commander. Like, it's counting on having her out to make this stuff recur.
Right.
So she's getting rid of her.
She's the key combo piece.
Yeah. So killing her or exiling her because she'll just go back to the command zone and you cast her again it's okay, but it's not a good way to get rid of her. Yeah. Tucking her within the deck somewhere. There's a card called Unexpectedly Absent, which also puts her deep into the deck. Those are ways to sort of make it so they don't have access to her, and that really will, that'll slow this deck down like a ton.
Right, and if you're playing red, the one and only card that you have that is in your color is Chaos Warp.
Yep.
Which isn't not even the best.
It's not the best, but it does something. Because
there is a chance that she'll just flop right back out.
So another effect would be there's effects like Meddling Mage.
One of my favorite cards.
Yeah, or Nevermore. And what they say is when you play the card, you name a card, and then that card cannot be played.
Right.
So they'd have to kill Meddling Mage or get rid of Nevermore, which is an enchantment, before they could play Marchesa, because you can just play it out and say Marchesa, and then now that card just cannot be played.
And Meddling Mage, if you're in the colors, only costs 2 mana.
Yep.
So even if they are able to kill it on turn 6, you know, let's say you play it turn 4 and they're like, okay, well, I guess I can't play my commander. I have to wait until I get an answer for it. That's still 2 turns where they don't get to start building their combos and you get to, you know, hopefully get a little further ahead.
Yep. So I think Meddling Mage is a pretty strong commander card in general. You're usually going to be playing against one deck that like wants its commander out pretty bad.
I feel like it's a great card in any format because, you know, if you're playing against decks that can have 4 things in them, you know, like Standard and all that, then Meddling Mage is like, all right, I know they have Thoughtseize in here. Boom. Goodbye, Thoughtseize. You know, or in the case of Commander, it's just you can shut down one commander.
Which a lot of times can shut down the whole deck. Right.
Like, decks like Prosh do not exist without Prosh.
Yeah, exactly, because they can't do everything. If everything in the deck is built up towards like what their commander can do, and you just say, well, you can't play your commander anymore, then it's like the off switch. I think the scariest thing, if I am playing the Marchesa deck and somebody else has Graveyard Hate.
Ah, yes.
That's the thing that can completely like destroy this deck. Because remember, when you sack your modular guy, he goes to the graveyard, and then he waits until the end step to come back.
Yep.
So if they have something that removes things in a graveyard from play or from the game, so, you know, that's what we call Graveyard Hate.
Yeah.
There's Deathrite Shaman,
which can do it at instant speed. Rakdos Shaman for 2-drop. Yeah. You can just exile all cards in the graveyard.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gone.
Yeah. So
you will not be playing more Chase.
So they're not coming back into play because they've been removed from the graveyard. And when that triggers at the end step, it goes to look for the card to bring it back into play, and it's just gone.
Right. And we should also mention that Marchesa, when she dies, you can choose to put her in your command zone and have her cost 2 more, or stick her in your graveyard and have her trigger her effect on herself.
Correct.
So ideally, you don't want to put her in the command zone because...
Yeah, you want her to recur herself for free. Yeah, exactly. But if somebody's playing Graveyard Hate, oh, you just got hosed.
You got to be careful sometimes. Yeah.
So that's the scariest thing. So what do we have that seems like it counters this deck, but it doesn't? You know, what I think, like Wrath Effects.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Wrath Effects and how effective they are. But
but they don't work against this deck because everything's got +1/+1 counters. All of a sudden, you Wrath, all your stuff dies, everybody else's stuff dies, but the Marchesa deck, all its stuff just comes back at the next end step.
Yeah, with a burning passion to get rid of you.
Plus, if they're smart, they go, oh, you're going to Wrath? Okay, I'll just sacrifice all my stuff and I'll get all my cool effects from that, and then all my dudes will come back.
And the last thing they want to do is Wrath when you've got a Purphoros out.
Yeah.
You know, because he's gonna stick around.
Yeah, exactly. He's indestructible. So exile effects seem like good ideas because you're like, well, if I exile it...
It's gone for good.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they have sacrifice outlets. So you go to exile it, and they sacrifice it in response.
Yeah.
And then nothing... You didn't exile it. It just died like normal.
Right. Their sac outlet gets to be placed above the stack of your sweet Swords to Plowshares or whatever it is, and you just... get to watch that creature come back.
You get to be sad because your Swords of Plowshares didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Bounce effects, unsummon effects also seem like they'd be a decent idea, but same problem. They just sack it in response.
Yeah.
That's why sacrifice outlets are so strong. Control magic effects, the same thing. You go to steal it, they go, nope, I'll just sacrifice it first. Now you don't get it.
Yeah. And I would also say about bounce in general, it doesn't seem as powerful in Commander as it could be.
Yeah, we didn't mention that earlier. I would say, bounce is what we call a tempo play.
Mm-hmm.
It's inherently card disadvantage because you didn't actually get rid of the card.
Right. You just disrupted their turn.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe not. Maybe they won't play that same card next turn. Maybe they have something completely different that you weren't expecting, and you should have gotten rid of that creature instead.
And tempo plays are useful in quicker games and not as useful in longer games. The longer the game goes, the more card advantage is going to sort of play out. You know, if you're going to kill them very quickly in like 3 or 4 turns, then it doesn't matter how many cards they have in their hand.
Absolutely.
But if they're going to last 10, 12, 13, 14 turns, then all of a sudden the amount of cards and the amount of answers they have really become important.
Mm-hmm.
So things like Unsummoned that just takes a creature and puts it in their hand. It's not that it's not usable. There are instances where it's usable. I mean, if they've got Avacyn out, which makes everything indestructible. Sometimes you just want a bouncer so you can kill everything else.
Yep, yep.
You know, it's not that it's not usable. It's just inherently less powerful than it would be.
And in that case, if I have a choice between bouncing something or paying a little more to steal it forever.
Yeah, just steal it forever.
I'll take it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good point.
I'll use that control magic.
That's a good point.
If they don't have a sack outlet for it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So,
okay, so now we know the effective ways that they're going to try and come at us. They're going to try and tuck our commander deep into our deck. Mm-hmm. They're going to have meddling mage so that we can't play our commander. They're going to try some graveyard hate. So what do we want to do to sort of avoid their disruption?
Well, like you explained earlier, I like the concept and the idea of the disruption package.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like an assortment of like three or four cards that should go in every color. You know, if you have those colors, you should put it in your deck. So Counterspell, obviously, is the way to start.
If you're playing blue, Counterspell is your answer to almost everything.
As is Hinder. And, you know, if you have a little more money in the bank, Pact of Negation is great because no one sees that coming.
True.
No one has ever seen the Pact of Negation coming.
True. You can even afford to put things that only counter instants and sorceries,
mm-hmm.
Because you know you're worried about graveyard hate. You're worried about you're worried about hinder. You're worried about unexpectedly absent. You know.
Also, permanent removal, enchantment removal is really really powerful.
Yeah,
I think in general you should always have enchantment removal in Commander because these
colors have a tough time with enchantment removal in general though because white and green are the enchantment removal colors.
True.
So it's going to be tougher for you to find enchantment removal, which means Counterspell is going to be even more important because you just don't want to let it land on the grid on the battlefield.
Yeah. How are you going to stop people from hurting you?
Glenalendra, I think, is actually a really good
probably one of my favorite creatures for blue.
And she's awesome in this deck because what happens is she's got Persist, which means like, okay, if you don't know what Glenalendra is, she is a creature where you tap one mana and you sacrifice her and she counters a non-creature spell.
Yep.
She has Persist though, so she returns to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter on her.
And she can do it one more time.
She's a 2/2, so she can basically counter two spells before she's gone for good.
Yeah, for two mana.
But in this deck, you can add +1/+1 counters to creatures. You have a multitude of ways to do that. So if you have a -1/-1 counter on you and I put a +1/+1 counter on you, you just now have no counters on you.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you sack her, she dies, she has Persist, she comes back with a -1/-1 counter on her.
Throw
so if you can put throw another counter on her. Now you could, so you can, in theory, you could counter as many non-creature spells as you wanted.
Yep, as long as you have that mana up.
Yeah.
And that's just great. She's and not to mention she's a flyer too. So if worse comes to worse and you need to chump block that giant dragon coming your way, Glenalendra will do it and then come back.
And then come back. Yep. She's very strong in this deck, and I think
just a great overall must include card for anyone that's playing.
In almost every blue deck you want her, but in this deck with a lot of recursion, she's super strong.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to make sure that, you know, your disruption package, you're only going to have 5-6 cards maybe at most. Don't waste them on something that it doesn't need to be wasted on. You know, don't just pop it off when you're like, oh, I don't like that. It's like, think about it. If that's something that's really going to mess your game up, then yes. And then a lot of times, too, sometimes someone is saving one spell, waiting for one counter spell before another one pops up. You know, before something else comes up that they're really waiting to do because they're like, well, maybe I can bait them into countering this first thing and tapping that mana. And then the big hitter is really coming up next. So you always want to make sure that you're ready for that. Don't just waste your counter spells on stuff that you
And use. Sometimes you want to save your counter spell to protect your win condition, too.
Correct.
So sometimes you're going to play Purphoros and you're going to kill everybody by the next turn, next time your turn rolls around. And the only thing that can stop is if they kill that Purphoros. And so you play Purphoros, keep a couple of mana open so you can counter anything. And it's like, now you're pretty safe.
Yeah. Or even keep a card like Misdirection in your hand or something that can just change the target.
Correct.
You know? Something that's like, oh, I countered that. It's like, well, I'm going to just flip that around so that I do get this out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have played against you enough and know you in the game and know the meta, they are going to wait for that chance. So usually just being able to one-up someone in that regard is all you need. Very rarely, I think someone's going to cast two counter spells to counter your counter and, you know, have
it happens once in a while, but it is pretty rare.
Yeah, it is pretty rare.
I think it's a good point to, you know, don't get trigger happy with your removal, your disruption, your counter spells, you know, because like we said, it is a format where big effects, big flashy combos happen. So you want to make sure that, you know, just because something's a little bit scary, you don't waste anything on it. Yeah. Waste your stuff on the things that are literally going to end you.
Right.
If you don't.
Right. If they set you back a little bit, that's all right. You know, there are always ways to get things back. And that's why stuff like Toxic Deluge is also great because you know, even if your creatures do die when you Toxic Deluge across the board, which gives everyone -1/-1, depending, or -X, -X, depending on what you pay for it, you know, if your guys come back and you can wipe the entire board, that's That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Toxic Deluge is it's a board wipe wrath effect. It does, it gives every creature negative X, and X is the amount of life you pay. So if you pay 8 life, every creature gets -8/-8, which is a good way around indestructible.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way around
hexproof. Yeah, it's maybe the best board wipe. It also costs only 3 mana.
Yeah.
It just costs you life also, but life is something that you have a large supply of in Commander. So
exactly. You could get rid of a 39/39 creature if you wanted to.
If you really had to. Well, if you had no blockers, you would have to because it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
So it's going to do 39 damage to you anyway.
Correct.
So Toxic Deluge is another good effect.
Yeah,
so
combine that with a Great Betrayal and you've got the biggest army of all time.
Well, and also in this deck, your creatures are going to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
So you want to wrath the board because your guys die and they come back. So. Yeah.
Another disruption card that I think that wasn't listed here is Insurrection, which I think is maybe not an auto include in every Marchesa deck, but it is in the colors. So it's a win condition, right? So let's say things are looking dire. You don't have your guys out. You just have Marchesa, maybe one modular guy. Insurrection is great because you take control of all your creatures, everyone's creatures on the board. They gain haste. They untap till end of turn. So you can spend a whole turn swinging at people doing whatever you want with those creatures because they're not going to have blockers up. And if you have a sac outlet, you can essentially steal all those creatures or at the very least kill them so they don't go back.
Well, what you could do too is you could take everybody's creatures. Insurrection, what it does is take everyone's creatures on the board, all your opponents, and then you swing at the person with the most life. They all get the +1/+1 counters because of Dethrone.
That's right.
You sack them all, and now they're all yours for good.
Yep. Yep. That's very true. Unless you're at the most
that life. Is a dream that I want to live, my friend.
That's a pretty fun dream. Yeah, and it definitely will make everyone's mouth drop as they realize that they need to push
I like your chances in that game if you ever pull that off.
Right. And, that, you know, it's by turn 8. If that's the one thing you cast in turn 8, but you've already got your sack outlets and everything else out there, it's a good time.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that is obviously we didn't go through like the full 100 card deck. It's just a philosophy behind how you might start building it.
And if you guys want to see the Marchesa deck that we built, you can check out the full deck list in the show notes. Now, this is by no means a quote unquote final deck, but a great starting off point so you guys can see what the cards we were talking about all in one convenient area. Just check out the show notes.
Yeah, and we welcome continued discussion about the deck. So if you've got any improvements you want to make, you know, suggestions like that, please put them in the comments. So I think that's going to wrap up our first episode. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself. Jimmy, where can we find you on social media?
The interwebs. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at JFWONG. And that's the best place to send me your comments, feedback, and just tell me how much I'm just the best.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You can also check him out on his various, geez, you're all over
YouTube. I am all over the place, yeah. YouTube.com/Jimmy, I think, is the main place for music and stuff. If you guys like cooking and fantastical foods, Feast of Fiction is the name of a cooking show I do. And there's always Video Game High School, too.
VGHS, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. Yeah, you can find me at Josh Lee Kwai on Twitter.
And you can also find the show at Command Cast, and that's fully spelled out COMMAND Cast. So you can just send us anything you want.
If you have a suggestion or a request for a commander that you want us to talk about, you can email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com. That's commandcast@rocketjump.com. So please, any suggestions, any critiques, any criticisms, but definitely we're looking for requests on Commander Spotlight. So send us that.
And also, if you guys are watching this show right now, there is an option to listen to it. And if you're listening to this show, there's an option to watch it.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, right? You can download the podcast and subscribe. There is an RSS feed for all that stuff. So just check out the links. It's all going to be in the show notes.
It's really cool because you can actually see the cards as we talk about them.
Yeah.
Okay, so next episode, we're going to do Politics and Negotiations at the Table. And
a new Commander Spotlight. Yeah, we don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm excited for whoever it's going to be. I don't know who
exactly. And I'm excited to talk about politics because I think that is something that very rarely comes into play with Magic. So talking about politics, good times.
It'll be fun times. Yeah, it'll be fun times talking about Magic politics, not like actual politics.
Yeah, right? The one last thing I want to do is talk about real politics on the show about Magic.
It's the only time you'll ever say I want to talk about politics.
That's right. I cast this president. He's a 4-4 butthole, you know?
All right, on that note, everybody, we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.